This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network. We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Not sure what happened to the theme song right there at the end. I guess we had to speed it up just a touch. Hope all of you are doing well. This is your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD, and we are live, just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. It is right now straight up 10 o'clock Central Time, and it is the 8th day of December. Unfortunately, a Monday. I know. You always think it's going to happen to somebody else. Then you wake up, and it's Monday. But I hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. I'll go ahead and say it. I'm just going to say it, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't mean to rub, you know, anybody's noses in anything, but I did, in fact, finish all of my Christmas shopping this weekend. Yes, I did it, ladies and gentlemen. It's eight days into the season here and done. Finished, completely finished. Now the problem comes down to wrapping. See, I'm really good when it comes to selecting presents for people. It's one of my favorite things to do, really. But wrapping the presents, not so much a strong suit of mine. It might be just because I'm a boy. I don't really know. I swear, though, if you gave my mother a single Kleenex and a Boeing 777, she could cover that thing, probably have enough material left over to make it all camouflage, like a wagon or something like that. If you gave me just the box of Kleenexes, empty, and the entire Sunday edition of the New York Times with which to cover it, couldn't be done. I'd probably end up in the hospital with paper cuts. That's how bad my wrapping skills are. So if anybody out there loves to wrap stuff, please give us a call. Would love to go ahead and send you my presents. You can wrap them and send them to where they need to go. That would be awesome. Anyway, I hope you guys are ramping up for a good week. Today is going to be one heck of a show. I have to tell you right now, a lot of things going on in the news over the weekend. And I also have to tell you, it's going to be a heck of a week, ladies and gentlemen. This this Greg Moore story that we have been covering for a few weeks now is, I think, really getting some traction. And I think this week might be the week that it really, really gains enough traction to get some national attention. And so for those of you who have been following along, obviously we're talking about the mortgage crisis situation. Greg Morse has uncovered a lot of information regarding the Seed Corporation and the DTCC, and they've essentially tracked the mortgage crisis all the way through to its fruition. And unfortunately, the fruition of the derivatives that were created in the mortgage crisis, the bottom line is that those derivatives were then leveraged by bankers and criminal elements inside the government here and abroad, and then used to fund black ops such as the fall of Kiev, things like that. So they have essentially, and when I say they, I mean the criminal cabal of bankers, have essentially fleeced us all out of the value of our homes. They then packaged that value in derivatives and then leveraged it thousands of times, took that money, didn't pay any taxation with it, which is obviously going to be, you know, one of the cruxes of the story, is we're talking about the largest tax evasion story in the history of our country. And that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of this one. But we also know that because of Scott Bennett's research, that a lot of that money did go overseas and was used to fund organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and things like that. So anyway, Greg Morse did a very good extended interview with David Knight of InfoWars just last week, and they have released a couple small segments of the interview so far, but we believe that that story in its entirety is going to end up airing today, either during the radio show or during the InfoWars Nightly News tonight. We hope that it's going to be up soon because this is that's what we need to have happen right now. We need to have as many people as possible learning about this because the solution is very simple, actually. We get enough people to sign Greg's petition, to which there is a link on the Red Pill Report's homepage. If we get enough people to sign that petition and we show up in Washington with 100,000 of us ready to do some actual investigating, you know, on camera in front of Congress, there's just no way that this issue won't get resolved. So I'm thinking that today might be the start of something just absolutely amazing in that respect. And also in that respect, Greg himself has actually written three very, very good articles, each one about a different facet of this particular story. All of them are hosted right now on redpillreports.com. If you go to the main page there at redpillreports.com, right at the top you'll see a line that says Red Pill Reports Featured, and it says Mortgage Crisis, the entire story, the whole story. You can go to that link that says Mortgage Crisis, and then you will find these three articles that Greg has finished over this weekend in anticipation of getting this thing really in the front of the national media and in front of the largest alternative media sources there are. The articles that you're looking for, first one is called Is My Mortgage Funding American Black Ops? This is obviously the black op link in the story, what the money was ultimately used for overseas, and just really, really mind-blowing type of reporting here. He has another article, which is called Who Owns America? Seed, C-E-D-E. And DTCE, I'm sorry, DTCC. So Who Owns America? Seed and DTCC, talking about who actually owns the stocks, the bonds, the securities, who owns your actual residential mortgage. I think a lot of people will be really surprised when they read that report also. And again, all of this stuff is related. All of this stuff has it brings it to a focal point to let people really understand how the value of our homes has been stripped from us, and then how that value is then leveraged to create, you know, foment unrest around the world, and which resulted in the deaths of Americans. So, I mean, they stole money from us, they leveraged it, and then they took it to commit atrocities in our name. And, you know, to say that we need to put a stop to this is the understatement of the year. Again, this story, when it finally really gets out, and I anticipate it really getting out this week, is going to be larger than the Iran-Contra affair. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions and trillions of dollars of money being leveraged for things that nobody would ever support if they'd known that was what was going on. His final article is called Mortgage Crisis Perpetrators, which is the strategy to destroy evidence, talking about how they essentially obfuscated all of the leads that were necessary to track down where all of this money went. And they've essentially been caught with their hand in the cookie jar this time. So again, please do tune in to InfoWars today, and keep an eye out on YouTube also for these articles to appear. We want to get these things in front of as many people as quickly as possible, because this story has the propensity to really change the system once and for all. And we'd like to definitely continue to be a part of that. We're very, very proud of Greg and all the work that he has done, as well as Scott, and very, very happy to be doing everything we can to support him in this goal, trying to get this situation resolved. So please go to redpillreports.com, check out those three articles, get them printed out, and get them shared with your friends, and we will obviously give you a heads up and a link to any of the InfoWars stuff that happens in terms of Greg's interview there as soon as it becomes available. So do keep checking redpillreports.com every single day. We do our best not only to aggregate all the important news from around the world, but there's a lot of very good and unique information on the website too, because of our in-staff writers and people like Greg Morse that write articles specifically for us as we're trying to get the stuff going forward. So do check that out, and please continue to support redpillreports.com. Also, please continue to support Truth Frequency Radio. Let's see, 11 o'clock today for the guest. We will have Gary Milievsky on again. Gary Milievsky, of course, is the creator of the company Snoop Wall, which you can find a link for on our homepage. And I'll tell you what, Gary has been running around like a chicken with his head cut off over the last week. He has done more TV and radio just this last week, given because of his expertise and relating to this huge Sony hack. So a lot of information coming out about this Sony hack that's not making it to mainstream news. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're also going to talk about some things that you can do over the holiday season to keep yourself protected against hackers. There's going to be, you know, the propensity during the holidays to leave home and to leave your Wi-Fi stuff running. And there's probably all kinds of things that we're doing that are not very smart in terms of leaving ourselves susceptible to hacking. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some of the relatively creepy Christmas presents that are hitting the market right now in America and across the planet. As we talked last week about the e-cigarettes having the propensity to put viruses on your machine, so we want to give some heads up on some of the gifts that people may be considering for the holiday season this week, and maybe give you guys some other things to think about in terms of that. Give you a quick heads up tomorrow on tomorrow's guest. Cynthia Marie Brewer will be on the show. She is a very unique case and has a very unique story to tell. We'll just say that she feels and has evidence to suggest that her genetic makeup is exceptionally unique on the planet. And we'll just say that nefarious forces have cultivated her DNA. And why they may have done that, well, we'll just have to wait and find out. But going to be a very interesting discussion tomorrow also. Lots of big, huge actual information and news coming out across the wire this weekend. In the second news segment today, though, I want to give you guys a heads up on a story from the science and tech department here. The Smithsonian, my goodness, this is going to be huge, ladies and gentlemen. The Smithsonian has been sued, and as a result of this lawsuit, has subsequently had to come out and disclose some information, we'll say. I'm not going to tell you exactly what the Smithsonian has disclosed, but I'll give you a heads up. If you follow L.A. Marzulli and some of the work that L.A. Marzulli has done, also L.A. Marzulli will be on the show next Tuesday on the 16th, P.S. If you're following any of the work of L.A. Marzulli, you are not going to want to miss this Smithsonian announcement. This paradigm-shifting, earth-shattering, I don't know how else to describe it. You guys aren't going to want to miss this. So do stay tuned in the second news segment today. I'll get into that when we get into science and tech stuff. Let's jump into the international news right now. Lots of crazy things happening. As usual, there was a relatively risky U.S. rescue mission in Yemen that was attempted this weekend. To the U.S. especially sent U.S. Special Forces, including Navy team, SEAL Team 6 members. They were trying to go in and rescue in Yemen a journalist, Luke Summers, and also a South African aid worker named Pierre Corky in a pre-raid dawn on Saturday. Unfortunately, it was not successful. There was a dog there, and despite the best efforts of the U.S. Special Forces, this dog started barking, which alerted the captors to the SEAL team's presence, and unfortunately they decided to turn the guns then on Summers and on Corky. So both victims that we were attempting to rescue, both murdered by Al-Qaeda as a result of the dog barking, unfortunately. So President Obama actually had ordered this special ops mission when it became apparent that Summers' life was in imminent danger. What's unfortunate about this is that the other gentleman, the South African aid worker, Kirky, was actually scheduled to be released on Sunday. And despite that, we decided to try and go in anyway. And it was unfortunately not successful. I always find it interesting that we would be mounting. This is the second attempt, ladies and gentlemen, also in the last 11 days to free these two abductees from the Al-Qaeda stronghold. So you don't hear a lot about rescue missions going on very often, I guess, obviously, unless they fail. But I find it very unusual that we would have spent so much time and energy, you know, two times in 11 days to try and rescue essentially what they're calling a photojournalist. And I think that you can read further between the lines here and realize that we probably aren't putting that much effort into rescuing somebody unless they have some pretty specific CIA-type ties. But that's just my own conjecture on that piece of information. So a botched rescue attempt happening there in Yemen. A UN report now has revealed that Israel does in fact have links with the Sierra Tech Theories. This is a report recently submitted to the UN Security Council, saying that Israeli's regime military has regular contacts with Tech Theory militant groups operating against the Syrian government. No surprise there. The United Nations Disengagement Observer Force, which has monitored the Israel-occupied Golan Heights since 1974, said in this report that Israeli officers and foreign-backed terrorists have direct cooperation on the Syria border over the last 18 months. And this is according to Haaretz, reporting on Sunday. The peacekeepers obviously also acknowledge that Israel has been admitting injured militants for medical treatment in Safed and Nariara hospitals. So our friend of our friend is an enemy is a friend of an enemy is a friend of an enemy, I guess. I don't really understand what's going on there other than we know for a fact, and it has been kind of a known fact for a long time, that obviously Israel trying to promote the toppling of Assad in Syria, and now the UN seems to be backing that up. So there you go there. Turkey has banned the entry of over 7,000 suspected foreign jihadists en route to Iraq and Syria, according to the country's foreign minister just this weekend at a two-day Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which was a conference held in Basel. The Turkish PM, Cavusoglu, told his counterparts that Turkey has a what they're calling a no-enter list, which now includes some 7,200 names, and Turkish authorities have deported more than 1,000 suspected foreign terrorists since 2011. Difficult to believe. Now, of course, this story is coming out of Russia today, so again, you kind of have to take things with a grain of salt. You know, it is a mainstream media source, so you never know which side of the fence that we're going to be on, but, you know, this follows the report in the German news just last week that essentially Turkey's border is wide open and they are willingly funneling weapons and fighters to Syria. So there you go there. Russia is giving the Ukraine quite a bit of coal. About 50,000 tons of Russian coal have entered into the Ukraine just over this weekend. This new coal has arrived. It's supposed to help alleviate Ukraine's mounting energy crisis, which obviously suffered another blow just this weekend after a deal to import South African coal collapsed over the weekend. We had the story last week essentially saying that the Ukraine needs about 80,000 tons a month just to make it through the winter. So they are getting some coal from Russia now, so that might be good news. Of course, Russia providing this coal in response to the fact that the Kiev energy ministry has turned off power and is limiting consumption between 8 and 11 in the morning and between 4 and 8 at night on the eastern side of the country. And on Friday, Ukrainian's cabinet of ministers actually decided to extend emergency measures for the domestic electric market until January. And it's the third time such an extension has been granted over the last 6 months. So the people of Ukraine, especially on the eastern side there, definitely hurting right now. And moving into winter, I hope they can get some sort of resolution. Obviously, you know, natural gas not flowing into Ukraine right now, big, big deal. Moving down into Mexico, there obviously a lot of people have been following the story about the missing 43 Mexican student teachers. It has turned out now that the DNA testing of the remains that was found burnt at the landfill, they have now been corroborated to at least one of the students that has been missing. So unfortunately, the people, you know, the parents and the families' demands to the government to have these people, their students and their children returned alive, looking more and more likely like that's not going to happen. It's just so disgusting. I don't even know how to, you know, if I was in Mexico right now, the protest thing would be like the last thing on my mind. You're essentially, we have now acknowledged the fact that these students were taken by members of the state, and then the state essentially gave them to drug dealers who killed them. The state is 100% responsible for this, which goes all the way up to the president of the country, and I imagine that the civil lawsuits will be huge. I can't imagine that Mexican students aren't burning the countries down right now. And I'm not saying I'm supporting that decision, but I just, man, I wouldn't know what else to do at this point. Let's see, a German man has been indicted, for joining ISIS and sentenced to a couple of years in prison in Germany. So that is what's going on. The U.S. military command, has announced the new command center is being established right now, so they are getting rid of the initial command that they had, and they are essentially establishing a new command to oversee both operations in Iraq and Syria. It's going to be called the Combined Joint Task Force. They're not really giving a lot of indication on what it's going to be involved in it, but that's what's going on there right now. Also, 6 Guantanamo detainees, including 4 Syrians and 1 Palestinian and 1 Tunisian, have all been transferred to Uruguay from the American military base in Cuba, where still 136 detainees remain, according to Pentagon officials yesterday. Among the inmates transferred out was a Syrian prisoner, Jahid Dayab, who had staged a hunger strike and requested a U.S. court to order prison officials to stop force feeding him. So 6 Guantanamo detainees let go this weekend and transferred to Uruguay. Very interesting stuff there. Let's move on to some national news right now. Probably the most important thing, or at least the thing that's shocked me, I don't know. I'm really not shocked anymore. I guess I'm surprised and sickened and disgusted, but I'm not really shocked anymore. But obviously everybody's following the Eric Garner protest. The protests about this Eric Garner's murder, believe me, are justified as far as I'm concerned, and they blew up all weekend. But another weekend, another day goes by, another unarmed black man shot by a white police officer, ladies and gentlemen. Yep, not a day goes by, it seems, anymore. But in Los Angeles County, and we're talking about Friday night, not even 24 hours after the solidarity die-ins for Eric Garner wrapped up on the corner of Hollywood and Highland, the LA Police Department has repeatedly shot a man, reportedly in the head, on the exact same corner. Just happened just before 7 o'clock on Friday night. The only information released so far was that the man was transported to the hospital in critical condition and was allegedly armed with a knife, a fact that the witnesses are already disputing. And shortly after the 10 p.m., the LAPD announced that he had died. There were several witnesses. One of them posted immediately to Facebook. His name is Jordan White. He saw the entire thing go down. His quote was, he died right in front of me, and then a squad of police rolled up and put his dead body in handcuffs. What the F, LAPD. He also says he heard at least 10 shots fired. There are pictures on the Free Thought Project. You can find this article linked in today's news on redpillreports.com, where you can see this gentleman laying in the street, leaking from the head. I don't know what else to say. And actually, Ferrari Shepard, another witness, said that too. He said no CPR, just handcuffs, while he reposed on the sidewalk, leaking from the head. The LAPD later tweeted a photo of the alleged weapon, which, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, many of your 10-year-old sons out there have got the little tiny Swiss Army knives, you know, the little teeny tiny ones with one knife in the kind of clearish plastic coating. That's what this guy had, and it wasn't even opened, okay? So we're talking about the guy had a pocket knife that could barely be considered a pocket knife, you know? You do more damage with the nail clippers than you really could with the knife on that. But that's what they're saying the guy had. just unbelievable. So couldn't disarm the guy with a weapon that small, had to shoot him in the head. So anyway, that's what happened in L.A. over the weekend. And then in this kind of a separate and yet related story, We Are Change has now reported, and I kind of like this, not going to lie, that flipping off police officers, you know, the international ancient gesture of insult, completely constitutional. That's right. A police officer cannot pull you over and arrest you because you gave him the finger. Just saying. I'm just putting that out there. This just happened this week. The U.S. Court of Appeals in the second court ruled that it is obviously not a basis for reasonable suspicion of a traffic violation or reasonable suspicion for impending criminal activity. So if you're somebody out there that feels the need to express yourself in that way to a police officer, I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying don't do it either. But do know that it is completely constitutional. So there you go. Violent crime, apparently way, way down in San Francisco. What happened that dropped violent crime in San Francisco? Well, according to the chief of police there, Greg Sir, it's what happens when you stop prosecuting drug users, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. According to the San Francisco police chief, Greg Sir, violent crime has gone way down. Now, he is not saying, and I don't want anybody to say that Mr. Sir is a fan of legalization. He's obviously somebody who's been involved with narcotics for a very, very long time. But he does have the views that drug addiction is a health problem and not necessarily something that the police should be dealing with, but maybe that the health, you know, centers and departments should be dealing with. But regardless of what his viewpoint is, San Francisco itself is offering a pretty enticing glimpse at what American cities might begin to look like if drugs were only, if drugs were legalized and decriminalized. So the department in San Francisco still makes drug arrests for drug dealing, but they only operate on a complaint driven basis. So they don't go out of their way to set up stings or raids. And while causation does not equal correlation, Sir believes that the drop in violent crime since the shift in policy began indicates that his department and its priorities are in fact correct now. So good news there from San Francisco. Violent crime going down after they decided that they were not going to go after drug users anymore. I think that's a fantastic deal. That's a fantastic deal. There's a report coming out of Chicago from some of the protests this week. This is startling stuff, and it has to do with Chicago Police Department using the Stingray, which is obviously that that piece of equipment that sucks up all your cell phone data. So some leaked reports from the Chicago Police Department using a Stingray this weekend. When we talk with Gary at the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk a little bit about how to protect yourself from those as well. More national news, some big science stuff, health and economy.
So you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio, right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction.
Truth Warrior with David Whitehead. Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up 10:30 right now, Central Standard Time. We are live and we're working through our news segment right now. I want to talk a little bit more about a couple national stories and then we'll jump into this Smithsonian disclosure. It's going to blow your mind, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not kidding when I say this is going to blow your mind. But anyway, talking about the situation that happened in Chicago over the weekend, and of course we're talking about all of the Eric Garner protests that happened. But an audio recording leaked by the hacktivist group Anonymous appears to prove that the Chicago police used an IMS eye catcher, which is commonly referred to as a stingray device, to intercept phone calls during the Eric Garner protest on Thursday evening. The IMS eye catchers, which are small devices that mimic cell phone towers, give police and government agencies the ability to capture people's cellular data in real time. The audio posted to the official Anonymous Twitter account on Friday, reveals a conversation between the CPIC, Chicago's Homeland Security-run Fusion Center, and a police officer who is spying on an alleged protest leader. So this is actually what the police were saying. This is a quote from the actual transcript. It says, yeah, just the one of the girls is kind of an organizer here. She's been on her phone a lot, and this is an unknown government employee telling the CPIC. He goes on to say, are you guys picking up any information, where they're going possibly? Speaks anyway. And then the CPIC employee says, yeah, we're keeping an eye on it. We'll let you know if we hear anything. So this leaked audio, comes only a day after protesters began tweeting out pictures of this mysterious government vehicle equipped with the unknown device on its roof. There are pictures of this device in this report. You can find it again at redpillreports.com in the news section for today. But very ominous looking, looks like a Suburban with some pretty hefty looking equipment on top. So now, essentially what we learned because of this leaked audio is that obviously the police departments are using stingrays in the pursuit of things that would not be normally considered heinous crimes, which is the only real reason that they're supposed to be using them. And also, obviously, they're not supposed to be sucking up information from people across the country without warrants, without the specific articulable probable cause. You know, that's the whole reason that we have warrants for things like that. So Chicago PD using stingrays live on the weekend, and people not too pleased about that. So we'll talk again, as I said, with Gary Milievsky in the next half an hour about that. There's also a fantastic story from Michael Snyder talking about 19 signs that you might live in a country that has gone completely insane. So some of these signs, one of them might include when the people who are occupying the highest offices in the land tell you that an $18 trillion debt is under control. Well, you might live in a country that's gone completely insane. How about when your president starts acting like an emperor and starts ruling by decree and your elected representatives won't lift a finger to do anything to stop it? Nah, you could also live in a country that's gone completely insane. when the greatest dream in life for millions of your fellow citizens is to win the Powerball jackpot? Probably also gone insane. When dressing up sex dolls in fashionable clothing and photographing them is considered to be art, you definitely live in a country that has gone completely insane, ladies and gentlemen. There's tons of other reasons on here, and some of them I can't even mention on the air. You know, well, how about there's 2.5 million homeless children living in your nation, and nobody is calling that a national emergency. My goodness. So many reasons that you could really put your finger on to say this country has gone completely mental. Another great indication is the fact that the only guy who got indicted in the chokehold death of Eric Garner was the guy filming it. Unbelievable. Okay. Anyway, let's move away from the national stuff. I have promised a big story about some science stuff here, and I'm going to get into it right now because this to me is remarkable. And this is not conjecture. This is not a fake news site or anything like that. The story comes out of Vortex Courage, which is a relatively notable site in the alternative information universe. But what's really important about this story is that it actually involves case law now, that this has actually happened at the U.S. Supreme Court. So what am I talking about? Well, the Smithsonian has now had to admit to the destruction of thousands of giant human skeletons back in the early 1990s. Yep. If you've been following the L.A. Marzulli story, talking about Nephilim, talking about giants living in the world, the Smithsonian has always been under the gun of conspiracy theorists saying that the Smithsonian was, integral into the hiding of these things. But now a U.S. Supreme Court ruling has forced the Smithsonian Institution to release classified papers dating from the early 1900s that proves the organization was involved in a major historical cover-up of evidence showing giant humans remained in the tens of thousands, had been uncovered all across America, and were ordered to be destroyed by high-level administrators to protect the mainstream chronology of human evolution at the time. These allegations stemming from the American Institution of Alternative Archaeology, that the Smithsonian Institution had destroyed thousands of giant human remains during the early 1900s, and it was not taken lightly by the Smithsonian, who responded by suing the organization for defamation and trying to damage the reputation of the 168-year-old institution. Oopsie, during that court case, new elements were brought to light as several Smithsonian whistleblowers admitted to the existence of documents that allegedly proved the destruction of tens of thousands of human skeletons reaching between 6 and 12 feet in height, a reality mainstream archaeology cannot admit to for different reasons, claiming the AIAI spokesman James Sherwood. He goes on to say, there has been a major cover-up by Western archaeological institutions since the early 1900s to make us believe that America was first colonized by Asian people migrating through the Bering Strait some 15,000 years ago, when in fact there are hundreds of thousands of burial mounds all over America, which the natives claim were there long before them, and that show traces of a highly developed civilization, complex use of metal alloys, and where giant human skeletons are frequently found, but still go unreported in the media and news outlets, he explains. A turning point in this case, was when a 1.3 long human femur bone was shown as evidence in a court of the existence of such giant bones. This evidence came as a major blow, obviously, to the Smithsonian lawyers, as this bone had been stolen from the Smithsonian by one of their high-level curators back in the mid-1930s, and he had kept this bone all of his life, and which had admitted on his deathbed in writing of the undercover operations of the Smithsonian. He wrote on his deathbed, it is a terrible thing that is being done to the American people. He wrote in a letter, we are holding the truth about the forefathers of humanity, our ancestors, the giants who roamed the earth, as recalled in the Bible and ancient texts of the world. The U.S. Supreme Court has since forced the Smithsonian Institute to publicly release a classified information about anything related to destruction of evidence pertaining to the mound builder culture and to elements relative to human skeletons of greater height than usual, a ruling that the AIAA is extremely enthused about. The public release of these documents will help archaeologists and historians to reevaluate current theories about human evolution and help us greater our understanding of the mound builder culture in America and around the world. This being explained by Hans Gutenberg, who's the director of AIAA. And finally, after over a century of lies, the truth about our giant ancestors will be revealed to the world. And so the documents in this case are scheduled to be released in 2015, and the operation will be coordinated by an independent scientific organization to assure political neutrality. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. And it's funny because most of us already knew that this was reality, but the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court now is essentially forcing the issue to the front of the burner is just unbelievable to me. And this picture of the 1.3 long femur bone, 1.3 meter long, I mean, that is huge. That person must have been at least 12 feet tall, 13 feet tall. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So very, very cool news coming out of the science and tech world right now. I'm happy to report that. I hope that as the disclosure continues in 2015, that we get more and more information regarding that. And obviously, will be a highlight of our discussion with L.A. Marzulli next Tuesday. So is the veil finally starting to come down? Boy, I think so. I really think so. We talked last week about NASA's Pluto probe, which had been traveling through space in a state of hibernation for the last 9 years. They were effectively trying to wake it up on Friday, and it has turned out now that the probe did awaken, and it did send back information saying that it was ready to rock and roll on the 6th of November. It actually took about 4.5 hours for the signal from the probe to cover the 4.7 billion kilometers and reach mission operations team at the Applied Physics Laboratory at Johns Hopkins. So right now, the probe is only a mere 260 million kilometers from Pluto. Should be some pretty interesting stuff. This is obviously the first time we will have any type of equipment as close enough to Pluto that we can actually take pictures of it and things like that. There's also a lot of other scientific doodads on the probe, infrared imaging, ultraviolet spectrometers, and multicolor cameras and things like that. So we should get some very interesting information. It's going to be about 6 more weeks of prep work until we're close enough to really start doing things with this probe, but very cool. Science marching forward in that respect. Let's see here. Kind of a startling story on Tech Blog right now, and it's really just a series of pictures, so I would recommend everybody go and check again the news segment today. But this gentleman had found some very interesting things in some Chinese hard drives and flash drives that he had bought on eBay. And this is just, I'm kind of putting the story up as an indicator, as a little bit of a heads up to people who might be purchasing some of this stuff from secondary sources on eBay for the holidays. He basically bought 5 different devices. One was a 500 gig hard drive, a couple, USB card readers and things like that. Every single one of them, completely fake. He opened all of them up, and they were all weighted, meaning people glued nuts and bolts inside of the cases so that they felt like they were something legitimate. But when you open it up, it's just a whole big mess of hot glue and obviously no functionality at all. So just kind of as a heads up, guys, when you're buying stuff on eBay, make sure you're getting it from a reputable person, because if you don't, that's going to be on you guys. Let's see here. Scientists have now invented erasable printer paper. Probably a good thing if you're somebody like us here at Red Pill that goes through a lot of paper all the time. Some 90% of business information still continues to be stored on paper today, and most of that paper is just able to be used just once. So some scientists in California are hoping to change that with a new kind of paper that they have invented that can be erased even after it's printed on. So it actually can be used and reused about 20 times without any significant decline in the quality. But what's more is the paper doesn't actually require additional inks for printing, which is nice because it makes it more economically viable and as well as environmentally viable. So instead of ink being used to create words and images, the new printing process actually works in what you might call the opposite way. The paper itself is actually a film made of glass or plastic, and then through a paper version is in the work, but right now they're using glass or plastic, and it comes in red, blue, or green, and the printing process bleaches the sections where the text doesn't appear instead of adding ink to where it does. So oxygen eventually erases the text by turning the bleach sections back to their original color, but that process takes about 3 days right now. So they can heat it up, they can limit that speed that process up to as little as 10 minutes, and right now they're actually working on increasing the number of uses up to about 100, which would obviously put a big dent in our use of paper. And could obviously bolster recycling efforts and things like that. So very cool that we're moving towards that. Some information coming out of Colorado on a scientific front right now. The compound cannabidiol, which is a component of the cannabis plant, has been the focus of study for years now, but now it is about to get some extra attention to determine its medical use. Officials at the Colorado State Public Health Department have recommended that over $9 million in grant funding should pay for a series of clinical trials to assess cannabinoids and cannabis for pediatric epilepsy, post-traumatic stress disorder, Parkinson's disease, blood tumors, ulcerative colitis, and pain management. These would be state-sponsored trials, and that would be a very big step in removing cannabis from the Schedule I standpoint that it is in now, which obviously the government thinks it's Schedule One, which means it has no medical value whatsoever. There's been tons and tons of research saying that that's not necessarily the truth. One of them was in California, and so Colorado, following suit, now going to invest some money. And it's nice because if they're getting federal grant money, we're actually going to get some real results. They'll actually have access to quality cannabis, medicinal grade cannabis, and we can actually decide whether or not some of that stuff can be beneficial. I think that for the most part, the jury's pretty out on all of that. But I personally believe, after watching so many stories about children suffering from epilepsy, that there's a strong indicator that your endocannabinoid system does play into that. So we'll be watching for some of that information to be coming out of Colorado here soon. Let's move into some economic news right now. The Dow down just a touch, about 15 points currently. Gold sitting at $1,192, up just about $2 for the day. Silver following suit at about $16.28. Let's give a quick look at oil here. Crude oil falling quite a bit here, down almost another 3% this morning, below $65 a barrel to $63.89. That is that's a big deal. also a big deal, and stemming from more of this protest situation that's going on with Gardner and Ferguson and things like that. But on the economic front, NYPD officers are collecting several million dollars in overtime because of the flood of activists clogging city streets to demonstrate against the pro-cop grand jury decisions in New York and Ferguson. Of course, this was law enforcement officials talking to the New York Post over the weekend. They say it is a good time of year to be getting this overtime. And if the protesters want to pay me so I can make sure to pay all my Christmas bills, well, that's fine with me, said another officer. So right now, the cops are clocking more than 16-hour days, some of them starting at 7 in the morning and not getting off until almost midnight. But many of them are not complaining because of the hefty holiday paychecks that they're getting. Some have already worked three different overtime shifts, equaling an extra 36 hours of pay, which also adds up to an overtime bonus of about $1,000. So good deal for the police officers there, getting out and earning some of that Christmas money for, you know, murder somebody and then you get Christmas money on top of it. It's a great deal. Sounds like a great job if you can get it. Let's see here. The EU planning on ditching their plans to force banks to keep high-risk trading activities separate from their main business practices because of opposition from some member states. So what does that mean? Well, banks are not really comfortable being accountable for their own mistakes. They would much rather you were accountable for their mistakes. And so there has been an initiative in the EU to try and force banks across the entire European Union to separate the risky trading from the customer deposits. And obviously, a lot of people in the EU, and by people I mean bankers, not very excited about that potentially happening. So there you go. Look for more of that to happen across the world, I think. And then in another kind of interesting little bit of news here, I don't know if any of you guys remember the creator of the Liberty Dollar. NORFED was his organization. Bernard von Nothaus. He was actually convicted back in 2011 of counterfeiting charges for minting and distributing a form of private money called the Liberty Dollar. Now, you could buy solid silver coins from NORFED, and they were considered a private barter currency, which is absolutely 100% legal in the United States. But this gentleman got into a lot of trouble. They obviously charged him with counterfeiting, and they put his life really through the ringer. They had initially asked for 14 to 17 years in prison. Turns out he is only going to get 6 months of house arrest because ostensibly he really didn't do anything wrong. And I have been following the Liberty Dollar thing for a long time because I have some silver from 2008, but I also have a certificate, a warehouse receipt from his organization, NORFED. And so essentially, one of the services that he offered, he made these beautiful, beautiful warehouse receipts. They were essentially like a dollar, you know, like a silver certificate. And he had silver in the Liberty Dollar vaults. And some of that silver belonged to me. And the government came in and stole it all, which means there's nothing that I can do with my certificate to get my silver back. So I essentially lost my money. Lost my silver to the federal government. I know there is a class action lawsuit that is involving people like me who have been stolen from by the government, but not really sure what the state of that is right now. And I imagine now that Bernard has finally kind of come to fruition in terms of his indictment and his charges, maybe we'll move forward on the civil side of things for people like me who were blatantly stolen from by the government. Good times, good times. Let's talk a little bit also about some health news right now. Cuomo, the governor of New York, has come out and said that two more people returning to the state from West Africa are going to be under 21-day quarantine. They have both agreed to the 21-day in-home quarantine, and both of them right now not showing any symptoms of Ebola, but Governor Andrew Cuomo says Saturday that the state is going to continue to exercise an abundance of caution. These people are expected to arrive in the coming days. They'll be the seventh and eighth people in New York to undergo the voluntary at-home quarantine during the virus incubation period. Both of these people were in direct contact with people diagnosed with Ebola in West Africa. So just keeping that in our minds because there is still the propensity for Ebola to spring back up again. So it is a good idea to exercise caution and to try and stay on top of all of that. So, could a pinch of turmeric a day keep memory loss away? Apparently, according to Natural News, eating a single gram of turmeric each day could cause short-term memory improvements in people predisposed to memory loss. And this is according to a study conducted by the research crew at the Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, and also corroborated by several Taiwanese research institutes as published in the Asia-Pacific Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They go on to say, our findings with turmeric are consistent with these observations insofar as they appear to influence cognitive function where there is disordered energy metabolism and insulin resistance. So turmeric root has been used as a spice and medicine for thousands of years and is still an important component in traditional Asian cooking and medicinal systems. It's also a critical component of curry powders, giving them their yellow color. This story goes on to report some information about another study testing the working memories of adults over the age of 60 who had been recently diagnosed with prediabetes, which is known to be associated with memory loss. They actually gave participants a breakfast of white bread and then supplemented with either a gram of turmeric or a placebo, and then their memories were tested both before and after the meal. They went on to say that they found that this modest addition to breakfast improved working memory for over 6 hours in older people with pre-diabetes. So turmeric, curcumin, very, very important and super you know, every day there's another piece of information coming out talking about turmeric and curcumin and how absolutely beneficial they can be to our health. So I also want to draw your attention to, I'm not going to go through this entire article right now, but there's a fantastic report on the Activist Post today, and it's kind of relates to the health right now, and the whole thing is about coming to grips with conspiracies and trying to maintain your mental health, because this is a challenging issue. There are so many things going on around us all the time, and you know, the process of waking up is not an easy thing to go through. You know, you are you're presented with a new framework. You're basically required to go through every piece of information that you've ever acquired in your life and check it against the new framework. It can be isolating. You can be very polarized from your friends. Some of the issues that we talk about, you know, the 9/11 and things like that, or the Israel, you know, those are very polarizing issues. So there is concern, and people need to be able to be comfortable in their belief structure. There are so many things that are going on that will make you feel like you've lost your mind, or will, you know, it's just, it's important to try and remember that you're not alone, that being fully awake does not necessarily isolate you from everyone else. And that there is a community of people out there, and it's growing every single day, of people who recognize the true state of the world. But I definitely recommend going through this article, taking some deep breaths, and recognizing that you were probably born in this time for a reason. If you're one of the people who have the necessary hardware and software to be awake, then there's probably a pretty good reason for that. So not to be discouraged by the fact that sometimes we can feel isolated from our friends and family because of some of the things that we know. It can be discouraging, but again, go and check out this article. There's some great tips on how to improve the relationships between your friends and your family, especially if you find yourself, you know, polarized like I have in the past. There's also an article that has come out from Forensic Food Lab. This is really important because we are moving into the holiday season, and my big holiday push right now here in the house, the last things that I have to do other than getting the tree up are getting Boulevard's stocking figured out. I've got to get him some healthy cat treats and things like that. So there is a great article again at naturalnews.com and hosted at redpillreports.com that goes through all of the cat treats that are out right now and grades them on whether or not they have heavy metals in them. So good thing to check out and be aware of if you're a cat or a dog lover like I am. We're going to come back from this 3-minute break with Gary Milievsky, and we're going to talk about hacking Sony.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
You must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live. This is your daily dose of deep programming, and it is my esteemed pleasure to once again welcome Gary Milieski to the program today. Gary, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
JD, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Well, of course, and I don't know if that's true how much you appreciate it, because I have on pretty good authority the fact that you have been a very busy young man over the last week. You've been running around doing all kinds of radio and television stuff, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of interest in the whole Sony breach, mm-hmm. which continues to be an ongoing saga with the PlayStation Network hack today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just to give everybody a little bit of background on who you are, you're obviously the founder of Snoopwall. You can find a link to Snoopwall at the redpillreports.com website. Obviously also the sole inventor of the company's technology. He's been extremely active in the InfoSec arena, most recently as the editor of Cyber Defense Magazine and the cover story author and regular contributor to Hacking Magazine. Also founded the Net Clarity Incorporated, which is an internal intrusion defense company based on patented technology that he invented as well. So we say that the gentleman here has a brain for the internet and computing. That would be a pretty significant understatement. Gary, I'm wondering what it is about your background that has made you such a hot commodity in relation to the Sony hack, sir.
Well, folks have asked for cybersecurity experts to try to explain how they were hacked and who we think it is. And there's a debate going on whether it was the North Korean government, a malicious insider, a former employee, or some hacking group that had some of their members go to jail. So that's kind of the debate. I'm on the side thinking that it was the North Koreans, because I have a little bit of information on them and what they do and how big their cyber army is. So that's been my take on the matter.
See, and that's unusual, because I think for a lot of people out there, you know, when you think of technology or you think of computer hacking, North Korea just wouldn't in my mind be on that list, you know?
Well, believe it or not, they have one of the largest standing armies in the world, even though they're one of the smaller nations. Mm-hmm. And they have a cyber army ranging, public knowledge says, it's between 3,000 to 6,000 members. Just to compare that with the U.S., we publicly admit that we have a cyber army under U.S. Cybercom of 1,000 members in the U.S. Army, and publicly that's, you know, in public statement, that's not a big number compared to North Korea.
Right.
The U.S. got to defend our critical infrastructure and our government against frequent daily attacks. It's crazy.
It is. Is North Korea, that standing 6,000, is that the largest other, you know, external cyber army that exists on the planet that we know of?
So we're looking at is probably number one, probably number two, and Russia's probably number three up there with Iran. And so the U.S. government is being bombarded from all angles, as is our critical infrastructure. There's a website that shows the live attacks going on, almost like watching the movie War Games.
Right.
It's called map.ipviking.com. And JD, you can actually watch live attacks coming from all over the globe, all the players in the theater, and there's no rules of engagement. There's no Geneva Convention.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that website is astounding to look at because, I mean, it really looks like, you know, a global thermonuclear. It looks like War Games. It looks exactly like that. There's just, you know, launching attacks from every angle, hitting St. Louis and Seattle and just around the world. It's remarkable to see how much is actually going on in the cyber warfare arena. But I want to know, for the listeners out there, for people who may not be into the tech stuff, what actually happened at Sony? Like, what actually happened for, you know, to their organization?
So Sony Pictures last week was hacked in such a way that this is why I think it was North Korea. First off, let's step back to the month of June this year. In June, the North Korean newspaper, which is owned by their government, of course, claimed that a top diplomat wrote a letter to President Obama asking him to pull the movie called The Interview, to pull the movie and not let Sony Pictures release the film on December 25th this year. So we've got a Christmas film coming out that's going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And what do you think the film is about?
I don't know. North Korea?
JD, good guess.
Yeah, right.
The film is Seth Rogen and one of his best friends there. I just blanked on his name. But two famous comedians are in a film where they have to – the CIA asks them during their visit to North Korea if they can take out Kim Jong-un, the current president of the country.
Right.
And in North Korea, we'll call him the demigod, according to their people, because they're brainwashed to believe he's from a family of gods.
Right.
So this is really threatening in a way, and it's caused North Korea to say, you can't poke fun at a demigod. Nobody can do that and get away with it. We take it seriously. This movie will be an act of war.
Wow. Are you still there, Gary?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought we were having a little bit of a communication issue. Sometimes this thing blacks out on me. So what exactly transpired in terms of the intrusion? Like, what were they actually able to accomplish? What were they trying to steal? You know, has North Korea even come out now and said, yes, we were responsible? You know, where do we really sit with this Sony thing right now?
So North Korea has said, no, we're not responsible, but yes, we're pleased with what happened. Okay.
Right. Okay.
We thank our friends, the Guardians of Peace. That's the name of the hackers, the hashtag GOP. Is the Guardians of Peace who exploited, but I still believe it was the North Korean cyber army that did it. And here's what they did. They stole thousands and thousands, I believe it's up to 47,000 employee records, names, social security numbers, salaries, even famous actors like Sylvester Stallone and others who were in their database, their social security number, their date of birth, things like that. Publicly exposed. Five movies, four of which that have not even been released in the public market, including Annie and Fury that was already released. Five films have been stolen in digital format and put out on peer-to-peer networks. So you could literally illegally copy or watch films that haven't even come out yet.
Wow. So what went wrong? I mean, I'm thinking about Sony as you know, they're on the forefront of technology. If anybody in the world is investing a lot of money into protection, I would think that Sony would. So, I mean, are we talking about potentially an insider getting in with a dirty USB and infecting their system? Or do you think this whole attack originated on the outside? What went wrong here, you know?
Well, my speculation is, and I think we're going to find out that this is what happened, is first off, you have to understand how do hackers or cyber criminals break into networks. Mm-hmm. It's hard to break in from the outside in, right? So people think, oh, immediately it's a malicious insider. let me give you a couple examples of how it happens when it's not a malicious insider.
Okay.
The U.S. Pentagon was hacked some years back by the Chinese government. How did they do it? They had operatives plant USB sticks all over Pentagon City and in bars and places around Washington, D.C. So folks would see a free USB stick and say, oh, someone left it behind. I think I'll pick it up and keep it.
Right.
When, you know, when USB sticks were pretty new and when they were kind of expensive for that many gigs.
Yeah.
And folks who worked at the Pentagon, of course, took some of them to work and plugged them into Pentagon computers and immediately got infected with malware that connected to China.
That's like the oldest hacker trick in the book, too. I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're somebody out there that works for an organization that potentially might be at risk for personal intrusion and you find a USB drive hanging out in the parking lot, don't pick it up and take it inside and stick it on your computer to find out what it is. Like, that's obviously, you know, obviously is a hacking tool that somebody is trying to pull over on you. But anyway, please continue, Gary.
No, you're right on. And JD, last week it was discovered, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I think you might have reported on it, the e-cigarettes from China.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So pretend you're a Sony Pictures executive from Japan and you love to smoke and you're visiting, or you have an office in the U.S. In Hollywood at the Sony Pictures U.S. and in the mail comes a mahogany case holding a beautiful e-cigarette that's brand new.
And right. Gold-plated and it's beautiful. Yeah. Right.
And it won't work because it's not charged. So what do? You plug it into your computer and charge it up. That's another way they could have done it. And finally, which is the one I think happened, we're all trusting human beings. If you get an email from someone you trust, or it appears to be from someone you trust, let's say for this radio hour, JD, you said, hey, Gary, send me your bio. And you get an email from someone that has the same name as me. It looks like me, but you didn't really read through the hidden SMTP email header, right, that it's from someone in North Korea. And you open the attachment, the PDF file, or an Excel file, or a Word doc, and suddenly a rat is installed on your computer. Mm-hmm. A rat being a remote access Trojan. I'm willing to bet that a trusting employee on the inside was really intelligently spammed or phishing attacked with an email phishing attack that included a malicious, we'll call it a new rat, a zero-day custom-developed rat, remote access Trojan, mm-hmm, that allowed the North Korean government to claim access, to gain access to the servers and computers inside the network from far away in North Korea.
So you think most likely that's probably what happened here?
Yes, and I'm actually going to guess that the IP addresses that get traced when they go to South Korea or China, not directly to North Korea. And the reason is, North Korea is famous at hacking other countries, and they're also a partner of China. They and the Chinese government get along really well. In fact, North Korea only has 400 public IP addresses in the world that are live right now. Imagine, and half of them are on the Chinese network. Half of them are on a Chinese telecom that they've had access to for years. So China gives them half of their public IP address.
Wow.
And what do they do with those little windows in the internet? Yeah, you got it. What do? They go hack South Korea, and then they get servers running we call command and control.
Right, right. Okay, well, then I got to go up. I want to back up to the Sony thing then here for a second, because obviously we've been watching the Target breach. The Target breach was a really big deal, and there's been a lot of kind of follow up on the Target breach thing. But when I was reading all the Target stories, no matter where I was reading the information regarding the Target breach, every single article came back to the fact that the reason that it happened at Target is because of the antiquated credit card systems that we have. Every single article talked about Target wanting to be on a 6-month path to put in the new microchipped credit card, point of sale systems. In fact, that they had already at the time of their breach, they had already invested like $150 million, and they were looking at like a year for the rollout, and they ramped up their rollout process. So I look at that Target breach, especially because it happened at a couple other places, as kind of like maybe a self-inflicted wound, so that they could either get taxpayers on the hook for paying for this new credit card systems or to pass, you know, to obviously the credit card companies themselves want this new point of sale system in, and they want to pass that cost on to the consumer. So you can do that by creating a humanitarian crisis. All your credit cards are belong to us. And then you got, you know, we got to have a new credit card system. So I'm wondering if there's any elements to this Sony hack, that we could look at. Like, what is their proposed reaction to this going to be? Is there any instance or any inclination, or indication that this could have been some sort of self-inflicted wound so that they could then, ramp up their protection or do something else, you know, after the fact?
Well, I think on our last episode together, I talked about counter surveillance. Mm-hmm. And the concept here is you're going to have malware. You're going to get compromised. You're going to be eavesdropped on. So why not hide the critical data the way Coca-Cola hides its secret formula?
Can you extrapolate on that? What do you mean?
So imagine that you have all these employees inside the building and you know they're going to get infected. Nobody thinks that way, but they need to start thinking, one, you're already infected and you don't know it. So many people come and go with mobile devices, tablets and smartphones and laptops and netbooks and notebooks, and they have so much junk installed that they don't even know who the source of the app is.
Right.
So no matter how secure you might think you are, employees come and go behind the corporate firewall with Trojan horses every day. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. So now where's the critical data? Those Sony movies, those Sony employee and film actors, guild members, social security numbers were all in the wrong place, right?
I hope so. Some IT guys having a real bad week right now if they weren't, tell you that.
Exactly. The passwords were really stupid passwords, by the way.
Like Sony 1234.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're one of the hackers.
Right. Hey, don't know. I don't know anything about Linux or how to run Backtrack or anything, so let's get off that subject right now.
But yeah, 123456, I think, was one of the passwords. So, this is sad. And so really, we've got to put the data in places that's harder to compromise, you know, a moat behind a moat in the corporate network, and make access to it difficult and have what's called real-time backups. So continuous backup where if the network goes down, if somebody, and by the way, the reason I think this was the North Korean government is, and not a malicious employer, malicious insider, the malware that was uncovered wipes the hard drives down to the boot sector.
Whew. That's pretty extreme. I mean, you'd have to get a forensic, you know, analyst to come in and verify that, wouldn't you?
Exactly. So you've got really innovative new malware. A cyber army of 3,000 to 6,000 people could write that malware. One employee who's angry or, you know, just got terminated, doubtful.
Right.
And by the way, some of the alleged malicious traffic came from an employee's house in Japan who no longer works for Sony, according to Norse, the guys who make that map I told you about, map.ipviking.com. And so, of course, they immediately go, oh, that's the suspect. Well, you know, these things happen all the time, packets and payload, but I really doubt that person did it. And it's so innovative that the FBI sent out a flash memorandum to major picture studios and other companies on the West Coast saying, be prepared if you have this kind of new malware. It's devastating to computers because it physically harms the computer versus old malware that might just sit around hiding and eavesdropping.
Right. Well, I think that's a pretty good line of reasoning, the fact that we're talking about a zero-day threat, and I doubt that there are any single employees at Sony that could put together something like that, and if they were that capable, you know, my thoughts are they probably wouldn't be working for Sony. You know, if you're capable of coming up with a zero-day that can intrude and wipe hard drives and that no one's ever seen before, you're probably not going to be working for Sony very long, I would think, you know.
No, and there's something called, in the Asian culture, saving face. I mean, you've heard about Japanese committing suicide if they've lost face. And we know about kamikazes as we're just a day past the anniversary of – we're on the 73rd year of the anniversary of Pearl Harbor yesterday.
Yep.
So I don't think a former Japanese employee would want to harm somewhere he used to work for not only fear of retaliation but the loss of face in his culture. So a lot of people don't understand cultures. North Korea was under the control of the Japanese. in 1910, and they've harbored anger towards Japan for over 100 years now. So it's highly probable the largest Japanese picture studio getting attacked, because their next movie is about assassinating Kim Jong-un. Even though it's a comedy, it's about assassinating a leader of a nation.
Right. Well, the North Koreans aren't known for their senses of humor, as far as I know, either. So they may not appreciate a Joe Rogan or a Seth Rogen movie like we might hear, you know.
Exactly. And so when you asked about countervailance, so if you have the data in the building, wouldn't it be great if it were invisible from the hackers? It's still there, but it's just too hard to get at. Yes, you can compromise the receptionist's computer, and yes, you can maneuver around the network and find a vice president's laptop. But when it comes to the actual movie data, when it comes to people's social security numbers, can't we put them in a server that makes them completely invisible?
Boy, I mean, I can't imagine. Again, it seems to me like the quantity of the mistake that was made is just so profound that I still feel like there had to be some collusion, you know, going on. I can't imagine that somebody was able to hack in and get to information like, you know, unreleased movies. We're talking about the bread and the butter of it. To me, that's got to be the most important thing that Sony has in its, you know, in its files there.
Well, there's no collusion necessary with the remote access Trojan. This is what most people don't understand. Do you remember Cassidy Wolf, Miss Teen USA 2013?
I think so.
13, what happened to her? So Cassidy was eavesdropped for a year. Pictures taken of her in the nude, coming out of the shower, in private places, in her bedroom, by this, you know, predator pedophile. For a year, because he had a rat on her phone and on her laptop.
Right.
So you can be spied on, and people can do anything. He got her Facebook password, her Instagram, her Twitter. You can be spied on for a long time. The CEO of FireEye was in the news this week, this past week, talking about the breach, because FireEye's Mandiant team is over at Sony right now. And he didn't want to talk in detail, but he said in general, the average company gets infected with zero day, which means new malware that's not in some signature database, it's Symantec or McAfee, et cetera.
Right.
For over 250 days before they discover it, on average.
Wow. That's, wow. So you're saying right now that it's very likely that a lot of other organizations out there are already affected and have been for a very long time and have no idea.
Everybody is compromised. It's some part of their network or on somebody's mobile phone or tablet or laptop, and they don't know it until something big happens. Target, Home Depot, you know, you name it. You're going to get breached if you have money or credit cards.
Right.
Or you have critical infrastructure, you have information. You know, the Chinese government's famous, and their companies are famous for wanting to see plans out of the U.S. military on the next B-2 bomber,
right,
or, you know, or some company's new invention. Did you know that Huawei, I can't even pronounce it. It begins with an H, but it's Huawei, the Chinese company that makes phone and routing equipment. Their first release of their routers, they admit this because they settled in a lawsuit from Cisco. It was an exact copy of Cisco Catalyst switches. They even photocopied the manuals.
That's when you're not even trying, when you're not even making your own manuals anymore, you know?
Yeah, you know, white out the word Cisco. So they settled, but they had images. So a lot of this cyber espionage is to copy other countries' companies' best ideas, maybe even improve on them. Mm-hmm. Others are to take down networks when you're angry at someone, right? Like a former employee or the North Korean government, you know, in my belief, hacking Sony. And the way they do this is so innovative. It's so innovative, it's hard for us to detect it until it's too late.
Wow. Is that similar to the Stuxnet virus? Is that concern that the FBI basically released this week? Does that kind of relate to the same type of program that the Stuxnet was?
Yes and no. The Stuxnet, developed by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and potentially Israel's Defense Force helping us,
right,
was a worm that was not known for a long time, that worked its way over to the Iranian nuclear facility in particular, targeting the Siemens SCADA controller, a power controller, a heat controller for the reactor. Mm-hmm. And Iran was so paranoid when they found out they were infected that they didn't, you know, they couldn't put that equipment online for fear of it going pretty much Fukushima. So that's the power of a worm to actually infect systems that could cause a nuclear explosion. Mm-hmm. In that sense, this is devastating because it wipes drives down to the bits and bytes of the boot sector. The question is it just doing it on Sony's network, or is it a worm that can work its way around to other networks and also be a rat remotely accessed to be triggered? That's the question. I don't know yet, and you know, we need to see this unfold. But it is devastating to be able to damage physical equipment, and that's kind of the new angle of this malware, that it's kind of like Stuxnet in the sense that it causes physical damage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so given your close proximity to and being an advisor for Department of Homeland Security and their cyber warfare division, is that physical control over mechanical hardware, is that kind of like the tip of the iceberg in terms of what the government is concerned about right now? Is that like the number one threat?
Yeah, I mean, the tip of the spear is, look, if China wanted to turn off our power grid, they'd do it, but we owe them so much money. It's kind of like the landlord turning off the power saying, until you pay your rent, you don't get your lights
right,
on.
Right.
If they do that to us, we don't buy all their goods anymore. So it's an interesting relationship. The U.S. government is very worried about malicious attacks and control of infrastructure mm-hmm. that could cause downtime, right, of the power, of trains, of airlines. It seems like they have the capability, but they've been holding off because we owe them so much money. That's kind of what I'm looking at right
now.
Wow,
that's a scary realization to come to, though, that somebody could have that much power over, you know, our livelihood and our ability to carry on in our normal activities, just kind of sitting there with their finger on the switch, so to speak.
And that's why there's new and innovative companies like FireEye and Palo Alto and even my company, Snoopwall, trying to figure out ways to go one step ahead of the next threat. Because if you just use traditional means to try to determine if you're infected, as we learned from the CEO of FireEye, you're looking at not knowing for 250 days too late.
Yeah, I mean, think of all the damage that could be done in that amount of time to any organization. I mean, it's just astounding to think that they would have, you know, a 2/3 of a year with which to play around with, would nobody would know about it. You know, it's just remarkable. Anyway, we've got to go quickly to a 3-minute break. Obviously, we're joined by Gary Milevsky today, and we're talking about cybersecurity and about keeping ourselves safe. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about how we can keep ourselves safe from hackers over the holiday season as we're starting to travel, and then also maybe give a heads up on some of the gifts that people may be thinking about giving right now that could do irreparable damage to your computer. So keep it right here, guys. 3 minutes. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more survival seed vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube. We're bringing a whole bunch of great new additions to YouTube.
Over the years, we've noticed that a large amount of copyrighted material is uploaded by our users, which is not okay with us. So we've revamped our content identification system to make it so if you even so much as steal a quote or use a line from a movie or TV show, your video will immediately be taken down.
And finally, in order to reduce our bandwidth costs and make videos even cheaper for us to host, we've made it so that videos will always play in the lowest possible quality, 240p. This way, everyone can enjoy fast video speeds and barely average video quality.
YouTube Plus. What are you gonna do about it?
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday, Truth Frequency Radio.
Of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 8th day of December, and we are very excited to be joined once again by Mr. Gary Milievsky, and we're talking about cybersecurity and about personal safety when it comes to your mobile devices, and we've also been talking quite a bit about the Sony hack and what actually happened there. I want to get into Gary's article, Halting Hackers for the Holidays, which is up at snoopwall.com, which is Gary's website and the website for Snoopwall, obviously. But before we talk about Halting Hackers for the Holidays, I wanted to ask you one question, Gary. There's been a lot of indication this weekend that the police in Chicago have been using those devices that soak up your IMSI information off your phone. What are they called?
Stingray,
excuse me, yeah. Is there any way, just as a side note here, that we can protect ourselves from these devices? Because I know that the NSA, we even had an article last week about the NSA mounting those things in Cessnas and flying around from five major airports in the United States, obviously soaking up all kinds of information with no warrants. Is there anything that we can do to protect ourselves from those Stingray devices?
There's only really one solution, and it's from my friend Mike Nash, the CEO of PrivacyCase.com. And he's actually he's letting us put together a little holiday bundle. But Privacy Case is a Faraday cage for your smartphone. There are two operating systems on your smartphone. One is the one that you and I know about. The other one is the one that connects to cellular towers and may even be on when you think your phone's off.
Right.
So if you put your phone in one of these privacy cases, you're going to be off the radar while it's in there.
Awesome. So I think, okay, perfect. That's what I wanted to know. There is a solution to that. I think that if you're going to be out protesting, Privacy Case, definitely something you wanted to look into. Let's get into this Halting Hackers on the Holidays thing. Obviously, a lot of people are going to be traveling this holiday season. A lot of things that people are doing out there using mobile banking and things like that as we're out shopping. What are all the concerns that we have about being hacked on the holidays, Gary?
So this is the best time to hack people. If you're a hacker, go after consumers while they're spending money.
Right.
Get at their credit cards on their smartphones and their tablets and their laptops and their desktops. That's how hackers think. If you're a cyber criminal, now's the time to get at us because we just spent billions of dollars on Cyber Monday, Black Friday, and folks continue to shop for the Christmas holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
What a great time to steal information and steal identities.
Okay.
If you go over to privacyrights.org, privacyrights.org, you'll see we've all lost our identity at least three times. Over 930 million records breached, we're talking about your name, your address, your social security, your birth date, and or, you know, your credit card information. This is a problem, and this is an exponential problem. So how can we shop and enjoy these holidays and buy things for our family and friends, et cetera, in a safer way? And I came up with 10 tips on how to do that and still continue to use our mobile devices or our desktops or our laptops or our tablets, et cetera.
Okay. Well, let's go through them.
Well, this is one that Sony learned the hard way. Assume you've already been compromised.
Okay.
What does that mean? That means whether it's your baby monitor or your smart TV or the webcam on your laptop or your smartphone or your tablet, antivirus is no longer good enough to determine if you're infected. So let's start with the premise, I'm already infected. And now it's time to reclaim our privacy by changing our behavior and looking at the privacy policies and the permissions that the apps we've installed on our devices are using. JD, how many apps would you say the average consumer has installed on their smartphone or tablet?
Oh my God. On average, I'd say at least 10. If I had to take a wild stab in the dark.
How many do you think come with the devices?
All that crap that you can't get off until you root. Man, there's got to be at least 40 ridiculous things on there that I don't want on, you know, when I first got my phone.
So let's say there's 30, 40, or 50 apps on our smartphone or our tablet.
Right.
Assuming we've already been compromised, it's got to be one of those apps if we trust the manufacturer of the smartphone. If you trust Samsung or Google or, you know, HTC or Apple, okay, you're done. You've got their operating system. You've got their phone. Then where are the cyber criminals spying on our credit cards and our mobile banking experiences? It's probably one of those apps that has been installed on the device.
Okay.
So let's get rid of the ones we don't use. How many on a daily basis, JD, do you think you would use on a daily basis?
I honestly, with a smartphone these days, it's got to be your Facebook app. It's got to be your Gmail app. And maybe a calculator. I can't imagine on a daily basis everybody needs more than that. But
yeah, if you you might use a flashlight app, and you might use Uber if you travel and you want Lyft or Uber. You want to get a ride on a lower cost than a taxi, and they'll geolocate right where you are on your GPS on your phone, and they'll pick you up right there. And your credit card's already stored in their app. So there's some apps that do use a lot of permissions, but I'd say they're worth having if you want the convenience.
Right.
However, if they're an app like a flashlight or a calculator, and they're geolocating you, and they're using your Wi-Fi, and they're eavesdropping on your Bluetooth or your NFC or your iBeacon, would you say that that's kind of a strange calculator or flashlight?
I would be suspicious of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you keep it or would you dump it?
I wouldn't download one anyway when it asks me when it's, I'm one of those rare, strange people that actually reads the permissions of things. So when I'm downloading something for a calculator and it says, I want a drop of your blood and your DNA sequence and we're going to send it to, you know, North Korea, that's usually where I go, oh, I'm going to opt out of this one and try and find something better. But, I imagine there's a lot of people who have accepted those things and have zero idea, you know, what's actually going on with their apps.
Absolutely. I would dare say that even you, JD, are not going to take the time to read the brightest flashlight privacy policy because it's 25 pages of spying on you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, we need to geolocate you. We want to... send data to China. We want to know a lot about you. We want to know who's in your contacts list. We want to read your phone logs. No, thank you. That's not the flashlight I want installed on my smartphone.
Right.
And so if you really want to block eavesdropping, especially while you're shopping, don't have apps do more than they need to do for the utility they promise they're going to provide.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So there's this guy. He has this thing called Tiny Flashlight. We made one called Privacy Flashlight just to prove it doesn't need to eavesdrop on you. And he argues that he's not spying on you. He was in our top 10 list of spying flashlight apps. His answer was, hey, my app is tiny, the others are big, and all I'm doing is using AdMob, which Google acquired, and I'm just, you know, collecting a little information so that I can send you ads so I can monetize my free app. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the AdMob toolkit, that the function calls you make to it, allow both his company and Google to collect a lot of information on your behavior while you happen to be browsing around. You launch the flashlight app, you go do a few other things. So the function calls that are made, in my mind, are creepy. I'll call it creepware. Mm-hmm. It's still collecting too much info to be a flashlight app.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then last week, Twitter announced that they were going to be doing the same thing. Twitter's now going to start looking at the other apps on your phone. Of course, Twitter, the, you know, benevolent, altruistic nature of Twitter, saying that they're not going to be sucking up information from those other apps, but they're just kind of curious about what other apps might be running alongside Twitter on your phones. Red flag, warning, warning, you know.
Danger, Will Robinson. Time to change your password, time to clean up your device, mm-hmm. time to turn off wireless and geolocation services, and start to figure out a way. And again, these are in my top 10 tips for halting hackers on the holidays, to have a more pleasant private experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so turning off all of the garbage apps on your phone and turning off the GPS locating and information aggregation, turning those things off is obviously the first big step. Re-sterilizing your device, essentially, would be your number one step then, Gary.
Yeah, and if most people don't want to wipe their device and start from scratch, then there's tools like My Privacy app or John McAfee's Decentral, or I think Bitdefender has one. There's a bunch of, we'll call it, more privacy scanning oriented than, do I think you have malware? Of course you have malware, but what's its behavior? So if you run an antivirus scanner and it goes across a bar from 0 to 100, it'll go to green 100%. Checkbox, Lookout, Symantec, McAfee, you're clean, your phone's safe. Meanwhile, you've got the flashlight, you've got the calculator, you've got the weather bug. The list goes on. You've got Twitter. You've got Facebook's Messenger doing way too many things.
Yeah.
You have to think about it and clean it up. You can't trust these apps.
So you recommend, then you have your own privacy app there at Snoopwall that can go in and look at some of these other applications and really determine the risks involved with them?
Yes, and you would be surprised with what we find on people's phones.
Well, how does your you know, app investigator operate differently than your traditional, you know, McAfee firewall or whatever it is that our phones come with standard?
Those folks are scanning for two things: heuristic malicious behavior and known signatures. So let me break that down into two parts. Heuristic malicious behavior: is JD's smartphone connecting to a server in China? Is that malicious? Well, the app said it wants to connect to China. I don't think that's bad, so I'm not going to call it malware.
Oh.
And then, you know, the app uses a bunch of permissions to geolocate you and collect your phone logs, and it's in the privacy policy, so, and it's not in my database, and so I don't have a mal signature for it. So, hey, so what if it connects to servers in other countries and collects a lot of information on you? That's just the normal behavior of consumer analytics. So what would have a malware scanner call that? A nice, friendly, trustworthy application.
Right, because it's not doing anything that it didn't already tell you that it was going to do, which means, you know, it's all bets are off. You know what it's doing. It's your responsibility. So there you go, I guess, huh?
Correct.
Hmm. All right, so what are some other things that people need to be aware of going into the holiday season here to keep safe?
Yeah, and to answer the other part, what does a privacy scanner do? It says there's a lot of weird permissions being used by this app. It's probably malicious. It's up to the consumer to decide, but it seems obvious if the privacy score from 0 to 100 is 90, 90 being it's stealing most of your information, 0 means it's just a real calculator. I would say the calculator that gets a 90 on our scanner is pretty malicious, and a calculator that gets a 0 has no internet connectivity. You type in numbers, it does math. So that's your choice. Go for an app that doesn't spy on you, doesn't eavesdrop on you, doesn't geolocate you, or go for an app that does a lot of weird things, collecting a lot of permissions.
Okay, fair enough. So everybody go to Snoopwall and get this privacy app so we can at least all check our phones and figure out what kind of pickle we're already in. And what next, sir?
Well, you can opt out of advertising networks as much as possible. Even in Google, you'd be surprised at When you set up a new Android, it says, hey, Google wants to collect data on you, and it only makes it a better experience. Is that okay? And everyone hits next, next, next. Mm-hmm. Little do you know, even over Wi-Fi, a Android smartphone or tablet without even GPS geolocates you using some technology Google developed by going around every country they can with those Google cars for the Google Maps and collecting MAC addresses, the actual fingerprint of wireless routers in people's homes and businesses. And now when your phone is on and it's trying to connect to a wireless router, Google's engine on your phone notices what router you're near and you're geolocated automatically. You can go into Google location services and disable that. If you don't, the last 30 days of everywhere you've been down to the minute will probably be on a map on if you log in your Gmail account on Google's website.
Yeah, you can go and see every place where your phone has been for the last 30 days.
So that would be maps.google.com/location history. I put it in my opt-out number 5 tip. I would opt out of that. And if Apple does the same, you can opt out under location services on your iPhone or your iPad.
Okay, okay.
There's also a website, donotcall.gov. Put your phone number of your smartphone in there. And if your tablet has 4G, it even has a phone number, I would put that phone number in the donotcall.gov. Just makes it tougher on the bad guys, because if they do, then they're breaking yet another U.S. law about contacting folks without permission.
Okay, fair enough.
JD, did you know your browser is a double agent?
My browser is a double agent?
Your browser is a spy.
Really?
Browsers act like double agents, spying on you for advertisers unless you block and remove cookies and frequently delete your cache.
Really?
When you're browsing the web visiting relatives for Thanksgiving, and you may have logged into Gmail or even Hotmail or another account, your browser has cookies to track you. You do some shopping, you go into the Bing search engine, you go into the Google search engine, you go into Yahoo or other. Then you go back to your house and you log into your browser and voila, one of the ad choices that pops up is something related to search results you were getting at your relative's house.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
So browsers with cookies are able to be used to track your behavior and help advertisers so that when you move from one web browser to another, one location to another, the browser seems to know a lot about you and so does the search engine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what then? I mean, are there safe browsers to use? I've always thought Firefox was pretty good in terms of safety, but obviously they use cookies as well, and they do track you. Anything affiliated with Google is the devil. So, you know, us Chrome users out here probably don't really have a lot of room to talk. But what? Okay, so what browser do we use, or how do we keep our browsers clean?
The way to keep your browser clean, Firefox is a very good browser. Opera is another good one. What you can do in your browser is find a plugin that's a cookie, the cookie monster. It eats the cookies for you.
Really?
Yes, there are plugins that will either block cookies or manage the cookies in a way that the results are misdirected and they really can't track you that well.
Okay, okay. Very interesting. And is that the Cookie Monster? Is that something we could search for to find something like that?
I think I made that up, but I think too much Sesame Street. But there are tools. Just look for privacy in my web browser, cookie manager. Those would be some of the keywords. Cookie blocking. Ad blocking, and look for a good plugin. Make sure that the vendor that makes the plugin is trustworthy. That's another issue. Installing plugins in your browser or even in Facebook. Sometimes you'll go on you'll go on some website, even a major mainstream media outlet, and it'll say, hey, log into Facebook before you comment on this story or YouTube. Mm-hmm. That will install a third party plugin into Facebook. So not only does Facebook eavesdrop on you, but these third party plugins get the list of your friends in Facebook and track you and do other things. So I clean up all my plugins. And then if you do get plugins in your browser, make sure they're from trustworthy vendors who are in the privacy space that actually have a website, a U.S. office, email that works, a support team that answers the phone.
Right. Those all seem like pretty good safety concerns or a pretty good heads up. Okay. So cookie blockers, getting the browsers straightened out is on the list. What's next?
Well, again, on this note, as you said, it's good advice. Shop from people you trust. And when you do shopping, if you don't see an HTTPS browser session, that's a red
flag. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know. You get it, JD.
Well, and for people who don't know, what we're talking about is when it says HTTPS before the WWW, you know, whatever website that you're on, that S is a super big indicator because it stands for the word secure. So we're talking about being on a secure site. They'll always have like a little lock or something there too. But for those who don't know out there, that's what that represents. And that's what Gary's talking about right now. So shopping at sites that have the HTTPS indicator on them, obviously super big in concern, okay?
Encryption is important. And when you're shopping at a major retail outlet, they're going to have encryption. And when you're shopping at some unknown vendor, they might not have encryption on purpose. It all depends. And if you think you trust them, you found some really cool item you want to buy. I'll tell you a little story. My mom was looking for a sweater. And she found one online, and she wanted this sweater with a picture of a lion on it, and it looked really cool. And I said, Mom, that website is in China. Why are you going to put your credit card into some, you know, what's the big eBay of China? I forget the name.
It's Alibaba? Or
Alibaba. Yeah,
there it is, yep.
Yeah, I don't feel like shopping at Alibaba. I don't see how one sweater is going to be on a slow boat from China to the U.S.
Right.
So that's kind of odd. And I told her, yes, that is a shirt or a sweater you might like, but find someone in the U.S. like eBay or Amazon or some other site with a similar shirt, because you're putting your credit card into a form in another country right now.
Right.
That's a red flag in my mind. I just don't want to pass that data on. I have enough problems here in the U.S. on identity management. Let's not ship our identities overseas.
Okay, so trusting the supplier, very important. Okay.
And a couple other little tips. Did you know that there's geotagging enabled on Twitter, Instagram, and iPhones by default, where every picture you take has your geolocation tagged and stored latitude? And longitude on all those pictures?
I did not know that. No.
So, JD, the less information you give out to where you're located, especially your kids, the safer you're going to be.
Yes.
You can turn off geotagging. I strongly recommend give out the least information about who you are and where you are when you're doing things like online shopping. You may be a victim of cybercrime because you took a picture of a cool thing you just bought, put it out there on Twitter or Instagram, and someone's going to learn, hey, you just bought a 70-inch TV, and this is where you live.
Right.
So why take a picture of it with geotagging?
Well, and I always get concerned, too, about people putting their pictures of their kids up on Facebook, because even if you're doing a good job to keep your location, you know, private on Facebook, the metadata is in that picture, and somebody out there who might, you know, there are bad people out there. Somebody might decide your child looks like somebody that they could sell, and they can get that picture, get the metadata. Now they have your address. They know exactly, you know, way too much information about your life. So I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that's a very, very important point. If you're going to be putting pictures up, understanding the idea of metadata and what can be gleaned from that, super duper duper important.
If you had a choice, by the way, of shopping with cash, PayPal, a debit card, or credit card, which would you use?
I cash. I mean, for me, cash is king. So
I should have added bitcoins, right?
Right. And you know what? I like the bitcoins, but I haven't found a way to use it yet that's really functional in my life. So Bitcoin hasn't even been a blip on the radar right now. So honestly, cash to me makes the most sense.
Cash is great because it's not really tracked. And the good news is it's your money. You've spent it. You own the item. You're all set. You're done.
Right.
Number two, though, is people think this way now to reduce their debt, so they start using debit cards online.
Right.
Most Americans are using debit cards over credit cards lately because everyone's trying to reduce their debt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a banking industry law from the federal government in the U.S., and there's a credit card industry law. Which one do you think favors the consumer more?
Oh, I would have. That's toughy, actually, between the credit cards and the bankers. I honestly don't know. That's got to be a toss-up. Do either of them benefit the consumer?
Well, they both do, but it's all about holding up your money. If you have a debit card theft online on your mobile device, M-commerce transaction, or someone eavesdropped on you while you're filling out a form in a browser, however it happened, we call those proximity attacks when they listen in on Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or NFC or iBeacon or et cetera. It's best, first off, it's best, as you and I agree, HTTPS, have a secure session. Number two, if you're doing it on your mobile device, do it not over Wi-Fi with some router at Starbucks or the mall or, yes, or you know, the airport or hotel. Do it on 3G or 4G because it's harder to eavesdrop in the proximity of the person to steal their credit card information or their debit card information when they're nearby.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay. So
HTTPS over 3G or 4G is much safer.
Right.
Finally, the debit card, if you have an identity theft, JD, and it's your debit card, the bank has 10 days to investigate. During those 10 days, your money is in their hands, not yours. If you spend $1,000 on an item and then somebody stole your information and they spent another $1,000, well, you don't mind that $1,000 is out of your account for something you bought, but the other $1,000 out of your bank account might be a big deal.
Yeah.
That's hard-earned money held up for 10 days. Mm-hmm. However, the banks during that 10 days will say, we need to see a police report from you. So now you go to the police. Now it's 12 days or 15 days. Then they need to do an investigation. Now it's 30 days. Then it's 45 days. And then you finally get your money back. It's taken sometimes as long as 60 days under banking law for debit card identity theft. What happens when your credit card loses $1,000 on some item that was identity theft?
Well, it's gone. It? I mean,
no, on the credit card, you are immediately not responsible during the investigation.
Oh, really?
Really. And you have a right by law to withhold payment to the credit card company of that amount during the investigation.
Oh.
I.e. you did not lose a penny.
Okay. So credit card, obviously way, way better than the debit card in this situation then. Okay. Well, Gary,
you
we
got
are
it way
we are,
better.
Yeah.
Just use your credit card and use it because.
Okay. Well, this has been that's a lot of fantastic tips, Gary. I really appreciate you coming on to the show today to give us all of this heads up. I'd love to have a little bit of a chat about some of the creepy gifts that are coming out for this holiday season and the things that we should be on guard about, but we are just about out of time. Want to encourage everybody again to go to snoopwall.com and learn more about Gary Milevsky and about the wonderful products that he has available for us there. Gary, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
JD, thank you, and I'm happy to come back anytime to talk about the creepy gifts for the holidays.
I think we should do it. We'll do it. We'll see what we can do about getting to GAC together again. Again, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, Cynthia Marie Brewer will be on the show. We're going to be talking about genetic manipulation and just all kinds of crazy stuff about the Human Genome Project. So do stay
we
with
think
us.
Think first of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people. Using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men, we want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? Yep.